Welcome to The Wayne Nicholson Show, where our guests share their fascinating stories. If you have any questions or would like to DM us, we would love to hear from you. We also have a YouTube channel and a Facebook page.
This episode is brought to you by Egypt Fun Tours. Now, I always said if Indiana Jones was to take a tour throughout Egypt, then Egypt Fun Tours would be the company he would book through. I can vouch personally, having booked this company when traveling to Egypt in 2019. If you are looking for a professionally guided service, which is knowledgeable, fun, and sometimes off the beaten track, then you can't beat Egypt Fun Tours. You see, my wife and I went with the private tour, which was personalized to our own interests and needs, which you can do with Egypt Fun Tours. We traveled from the south, visiting beautiful Abu Simbel, right up to the magical Alexandria. We got to spend alone time, would you believe, in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid, as well as camping with the Bedouins in the White Desert. We learned how to read hieroglyphs, and we visited the beautiful temples of Abydos and Dendera, which sometimes is not included on tours. So for more information on Egypt Fun Tours, check out their Facebook page, Egypt Fun Tours, or their website, egyptfuntours.com. This episode is also brought to you by Delhi's Continental. From just one pop-up and one sandwich, their reputation spread quickly, selling out whatever they prepared in 20 minutes. Boasting their Continental rolls are the best in Australia, with every ingredient fresh and made in-house. Now, within months, these two owners, Steve McCluder and Aldo Putsu, had already graced the pages of magazines, websites, and newspapers. Rumours are now stirring that this could be big. If you are interested in what all the fuss is about, and you are lucky enough to live in Perth, Western Australia, why not head down to Delhi's Continental, number 2/861 Beaufort Street, Inglewood, with their grand opening set to be this summer 2021. For more information, you can check out their Instagram and Facebook page, Delhi's Continental. If you were to ask me what music is played most in my place, a lot of my family, if not friends, would say old school hip-hop, R&B, ska, some would say classical, and some would say classic rock. But if you had to ask my wife what music is played most, she would definitely say jazz. The songs of Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Dizzy Gillespie, Louis Armstrong, Sidney Bechet, these songs are played every day in my place. So it goes without saying that I'm super excited about my next guest. He's an accomplished jazz musician, he's a composer, and he teaches. And I'm hoping he's going to teach me more about the world I love in jazz, specifically in the world of the trumpet, the variations of the trumpet, the different types, the tones, the mutes. Take it away, Reuben Kreisman. Reuben Kreisman, how are you?
Yeah, good man, how are you?
Yeah, second take.
Yeah.
I was just, I'll let the audience know that for the first time in my podcast, I had a tech glitch and I was just like, oh, what's happened with one of the cameras? The audio was fine,
but
one of the cameras just didn't, it kept coming on and then off. And so I got it serviced and it's sort of fine now. But I think we're more refined now, Reuben. We know each other a bit better. I've been over your house for dinner and...
We've had some good times.
Well, Reuben's a good cook. He cooked us some French beef stew with duck fat potatoes.
It was
roast
a very
potatoes.
Fancy night, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the asparagus. But, you know, the one thing that I took away from that night, one is how nice your friends are, and two is your cutlery. Your cutlery just jazzed me. I was like, I need to get my hands on some really nice. But you said you bought that as a... as a gift to yourself for moving in.
That's right, yeah. It was a little celebration.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you know, and I was telling...
a little splurge.
I was telling my folks about that. And Jocelyn, I was like, oh, man, this Reuben's got such nice... it's classic. It's like
just
the...
just talking me up, man.
Yeah, no. I'm talking up by cutlery.
By cutlery, yeah.
But look, the reason why I thought this would be a really good opportunity is for me to, and the audience, to sort of know a bit more about... the trumpet, because you're a trumpet player. You play. You were classically trained.
Yeah.
And then you went into an R&B hip hop band that involved trumpets. Yep.
And, you know, when you said to me you were in a hip-hop band, I thought, oh, you know, like everyone was back in the 90s. No, you were actually on stage performing. And I was like, oh, that was quite impressive.
What was everyone else doing?
Well, do you know, we're talking like getting up in a club and just doing a few bars and with a DJ.
Yep,
like how many people were in your band?
It was 10, I think.
10?
Yeah. I think it was 11 at one stage, but yeah, 10 was the... was the kind of, and that was a traveling thing as well.
Yeah,
so.
No, it was good, man. Yeah. And the fact that you had the, you know, the trumpets going and, you know, the rappers and stuff, it was just different. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it was, you know, as I've said before, it was a good time in our lives. And, you know, I look back on that very, very positively. It was good
fun. You should.
And, you know, a lot of us still really keep in touch. And
yeah.
And, yeah, good memories.
And then you're in a trio band now.
Yeah.
Which I really like. I've listened to more stuff on YouTube, a lot of stuff over and over
I've
on YouTube.
I've got to put some more up as well. Yeah, I think we're lacking a little bit with our.
Well, maybe you know, I'll put a few, I don't know, 10 seconds up on the video clip or whatever, and I might insert some of the tunes, depending on what you give me, just so the listeners can listen as well. You know,
of course.
And you're like everyone else in the arts industry. When you live in Perth to make an income, you teach. At the same time.
Yeah.
I just wanted to more or less find out more about you, but also why the trumpet, and then a bit more about the trumpet, the history of the trumpet, and musicians you look up to. And so at the end of this podcast, I sort of walk away with a bit more knowledge on the trumpet.
Sure.
And you've bought a few trumpets here today.
I have, yeah. I've got them on my side over here.
So that's
good. I'll pull them up and talk about, you know, their differences and... their coolness, I suppose. Yeah.
The coolness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the trumpet's very cool. It is. You know, and it's got that sound that can be so brilliant. It can lift you to places which, you know, and that's why it's used in the orchestra in such a way on those peak, you know, dynamic moments when the crescendo and when the finale is coming up, you really hear it just glistening like the cherry on the top of the cake. And that's why I love it. That's one reason anyway. But I mean, it can be used in such a versatile way. It can be used in so many different types of music. And I have actually done a lot of that as we've talked about. You know, I've used it in dub reggae bands and in contemporary music quite a lot, in funk music, and then eventually gravitated towards playing this jazz music, which I do now. So, which I personally think is the coolest and I suppose the most challenging music. It's never not a challenge, and it's never not boring, and you've always got something to work on.
Why is it challenging?
Because you can always get better at it. That's a simple answer, I know, but you really can. You can always master more skills. You can master more speed. You can memorize more. There's a lot of memorization that goes into jazz. Not just memorizing the tunes themselves, but then the constructs of the tunes themselves, which is the chord structures or the harmonies. And, you know, then getting up on stage in front of a bunch of people and being able to replicate that with the pressure as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about this kind of threefold process. So it keeps you very busy. You know, quite often I'm sure a lot of guys that play jazz who are watching this would agree, you stay up very late at night doing this.
Yeah,
and love it.
Yeah,
absolutely love it.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I'm jealous because I've always been. Look, I did keyboard when I was young, the piano.
Yep.
And you know, I love that. So that was one instrument that I thought I'd really like to take up eventually. But you know, living in an apartment, it's quite hard, and I'll probably end up getting a. You know, if we had a massive space, our dream would be to get something like a baby grand or something, you know. But imagine lifting it up the stairs here. Yeah. But the keyboard,
I actually
at least
own a baby grand, and it's in an apartment about three blocks from here.
Are you serious?
The piano player in my trio, it's at her house. And we have, since you know, I moved around this way, we have kind of talked about us moving it over here. But I can't find the space for it myself.
You've got a big apartment here.
Yeah, you surely reckon I should put it in there?
Surely it would fit in one of those rooms.
It's a big brown one. It's very pretty. It's like kind of, you know, dark mahogany looking.
The only thing is how's that going to go unless you sort of soundproof the walls?
Well, that's it, hey, you know. Yeah, and I mean, that's one thing I want to talk about today is how I play in, you know, a more kind of confined, you know,
that'd be inner good. City place. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, yeah. You would have to soundproof a room, you know, totally soundproof it, or have some very nice, compassionate neighbors.
Yeah, or rent a studio somewhere, you know. Like, I'm actually, look, eventually I'd like to move out of here and get a proper a studio, you know, once the money picks up and goes more. I'd love to get somebody that is a booking agent. See, I do all of that on my own now, and it's hard because I'm doing multiple things and then trying to book people. Normally, especially authors, are pretty hard because you've got to read pretty much a book of theirs before they come on.
Sure.
And then or get a summary of it and, you know, just be able to talk. But, you know, with that sort of a thing, I'd love to have a booking agent, and I'd love to have a tech guy that can do all the technical stuff and do the editing, because it takes a while, you know, to do that. But we work with what we've got, you know.
We've got to strive.
Yeah. So,
got our dreams.
So tell me, for you, why? I know you just explained about the love of the cherry on top, and when you hear the trumpet. Do you remember why you got into and how you got into playing the trumpet?
Yeah. So I mean, it's not really an exciting story, though. It was
all right.
It was the story where I was 10 years old and I picked another instrument. And then the teacher said, no, we want you to play this one. And I reluctantly moved on to it. And I think from there it gradually grew through good teachers taking me on and seeing people who are a bit older than me playing as well. I'm thinking of a couple of guys now who were, you know, 3 years older than me at high school, and hearing their sound and just wanting to be like them. So it kind of started there. And then through that, of course, then you start learning about famous artists and studying them. You know, even though at that stage, I don't think you really know that you are studying, you know, as you're listening to the music, but you certainly are. Yeah. And then, you know, by then I'm at university and I'm studying it. So at that stage I was at UWA and I was studying with two very, you know, very good young trumpet players. One of them, who was absolutely brilliant at the time, I'm sure he still plays amazingly, ended up becoming a police officer. He moved away from that.
Oh, really?
And the other guy is our principal player at Wazo now. So,
oh, okay.
So, yeah, that was the year. So it's kind of sitting around with those guys for a couple of years and learning lots, you know, as
I think,
they were as well.
I think that's a key as well, isn't it? Playing with people that are better.
Yeah. And also having the resilience to go, that, well, that's okay, you know, that I'm not there yet and I'm not going to give up and I'm going to keep moving forward. Yeah. So, I mean, that's one part of it, definitely, is the reflection of learning, you know, near other people. But also, as I kind of stated at the start, it's the alone time.
Right.
You know, as a composer, as a musician, the alone time is really important to kind of figure out what the hell you're doing, why you're doing it,
yeah.
You know, those types of things. Especially if it's something really creative, you know, like, you know, what we're talking about, composition or jazz, those types of things. What type of sound do you want to make? Why are you making that type of sound? You know what I mean?
Wow,
because it's all really
good.
It's not just music. It's a reflection of your personality.
Yeah.
As a stage musician, and therefore a reflection of your personality as a person.
So what are some of the techniques when you are alone to find that? What do you give us an example of an hour alone with Ruben at night? Like what?
It's getting weird.
Keep it clean, Ruben. Well, with the trumpet. Like, you know, when you sit down, what's sort of a process that you go through? Is there a process?
If I may start by talking about what other people do.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so one very known technique in jazz is transcription.
Right.
So that means you're listening to famous players and you're writing down what they did.
Okay.
You know, so and famous writers did the same thing, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Filmmakers.
You have Hunter S. Thompson, you know, writing down. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it is a famous technique. I have done a fair bit of it, and I do a bit of it, but it's not my preferred, maybe because it is quite difficult. What do I do? God, this is a really hard question. I suppose I just sit back and I just let things roll along. So and repetition is really a part of it, so just playing over the same thing, but having a process within that repetition where, you know, you have to abide by your own physical constraints. So, you know, I may go for just 15 minutes and then be reading a book at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I do that and go 15 minutes on, 15 minutes off, it might be 4 hours later when I look at the clock and it's 1 a.m., you know, and it's time to go to bed because I got to get up at 8 7 or whatever time it might be. So kind of rotating things has always worked for me. So I think, if I think back to uni times, I learned that I could do that through really multitasking. So, you know, I'll be living in a share house and cooking for the guys. I love to cook, as you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be stirring the stew. Then I'll go back and I'll be writing an essay. I'll be reading something and I'll be practicing. And then I'll rotate those four things. So for me, it's almost like this, you know, I can't stay kind of fixed on one thing too much.
Sure.
Why not? I don't know. It doesn't get too intense or anything. Maybe I get too bored with it. But it's better if I kind of just move around that way.
Last time I saw you, you were sort of making up your own composition in a more orchestral sense, like a classical.
Yes.
A classical piece. Like, what brought that on?
Okay, so there's no kind of great story about that piece. It's more again, just the practice of writing is quite important in my life as well. So it was about a decade ago now I started just tinkering around and learnt pretty fast that I you know, had started with something which I thought was all right. And then if I kept working, you know, obviously things get better because you become more skilled.
Sure.
So I'd move on and, you know, now we're 9.5, 10 years later and things have just moved on. I've written a lot of little pieces and I suppose, Wayne, it's just the inertia thing. So, like, I don't want to stop.
Yeah, sure.
Or else, you know, it might, you know, I mean, things can drag out but for a year and a half or 2 years without easy doing too. Stuff. All. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, I set up these nights where I go, well, they're the nights when I do that. These are the nights when I practice. So with that piece, it's just an ongoing thing. That one started July. I had July written on the, you know, on the title. Now it says February because that was the last time I changed the title.
That's not long ago.
No. It's less than a year ago.
Yeah, that's not long.
But I can say it's coming to an end.
Really?
Yeah, I was out last night working on it and I realised, shit, this is kind of, you know, it. Yeah, so I mean the idea through, you know, friends looking at it is they have suggested, and I've agreed with them, that it might be a ballet piece. So then you've got the constriction of saying, well, if you've got a bunch of dancers dancing, you've got a time limit. You know, you can't make them dance for more than, say, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really acceptable. At the moment, I think it's about 11 and a half, 12 minutes. So, I mean, it definitely could go longer, but I can't. At the moment, I just can't see anything else happening in it.
Do you find
that might change next week, though? Sorry.
Do you find, Ruben, that, you know, when somebody put a label on it, like, Ruben, this could be ballet,
yeah,
then your creativity started to go and be constrained by time? Like you were just saying, you can't get them dancing for this long.
Absolutely,
and
blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like that, or are you just like, I wish somebody didn't say that?
No, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think for a creative person, any practical restraints are a pain in the ass, but it's the reality of life. So we have to live through them and you know, live by them as we're making things to make sure that they actually get produced.
Yeah. Well, let's, I mean, if you don't mind, do you want to hear a few bars of what you've done? I can put it in later.
You want me to get it?
No, not now. Yeah, but yeah. I can just put it in now.
Yeah, I can do that. Sure.
Okay, let's we'll cut to that and I'll put a photo on the screen while we listen to that. Because I remember when I first, when I was listening to that, it was so different to what I was expecting, but it was cool. I listened to a lot of pieces like that, but more for, scores of movies.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of soundtracks by different composers, you know. So my mind, funny enough, when I listen to that, goes straight to a movie.
Yeah.
You know, and visuals in that sort of way. Well, I suppose like another musician would say, oh, no, this is a real ballet piece in that way, you know.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though. I mean, I watch a lot of film as well and appreciate and love a lot of films. So I think for me that is as much an inspiration as the time that I spend watching the symphony orchestras or classical pieces or researching and listening to my own pieces as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, all that stuff trickles into your creativity.
It does, doesn't it?
And what comes out. So, yeah, there's definitely a cinematic kind of element to everything I do, I think.
Isn't it funny when you ask to analyse your process? Because it's not just you. Yeah. I was talking to a writer and I asked her the question, and a painter. And they're like, geez, I've never thought about that, you know? And it's just, it's a question that probably anyone would ask. It's just they have never analysed their own process.
Yeah,
it just happens so instinctively. when you sit down at night and you start playing,
yep.
You never sit there and go, what am I doing in this? And it's like the artist, I said to her, you know, when you're painting, where does creativity come from? Is it an instinctive thing based on experience of your own life, or is it already out there and you're just tapping into that muse and that muse is passing that through to you? And she was like, and then she actually said she thinks it's both.
Mm.
And she goes, also, I don't think it matters. What was cool with her, Desiree, is she said,
yep.
whenever she paints, she's feeling something. Like if she's having a really shitty day, it comes through in the brushstrokes. So when she looks at the final painting, it's almost a narrative of her life during the painting of that picture. And she can see the parts where she was quite aggressive and then quite, you know, on top of the world and, you know, quite content just by the brushstrokes and what she was feeling.
Wow.
I thought music would be the same way. Because it, like, can you imagine if you're feeling frustrated?
Yep.
And you just pick up the trumpet and you just start improvising. Surely that feeling comes through the music.
Yeah, I think somewhat.
Or does it?
I think you can definitely play more aggressively. So that can really come through. So if you, you know, if you're feeling really pissed off, or if you haven't been paid by someone, or you know whatever the situation might be, which happens quite often in the,
yeah.
you know, unfortunately, but it does. Then, I mean, that can certainly come through, and you can be playing maybe more forcefully. And it's very easy to do on my instrument. It's a loud instrument, isn't it?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
it's really loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. So certainly, I think one constraint to that though is the song itself within jazz. So, you know, if you're playing something sweet and lyrical and beautiful, I think it does actually just bring you back to a grounded...
Oh, okay.
You know, that's kind of the beauty is that, you know, this is the paradox of what you're talking about, is it does actually bring you back to feeling good.
Yeah.
You come out of the gig going, well, that was great, and you've forgotten everything else that happened because you were so immersed...
Oh, that's great.
You know, in those songs, yeah.
I think I spoke about this before, but, you know, that one scene in Amadeus...
When yeah,
his
yeah.
father's going off at his wife and they're just... And he just walks into the pool billiard room... And he's got his music sheets and yep. he's composing. And suddenly the argument fades out and his music fades in. And he just pushes this pool ball, this billiard ball on the table. And as it goes around the table, he's writing the notes and then he catches it. And then he pushes it again. And it was just this moment I remember thinking as a musician or as any artist,
yep.
it's so nice to have that escapism that you can escape into that world. And block out this world.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I think people yeah. have different devices that can do that.
Yep.
But I think at least as artists, you can, you know, it's a lot easier, I think, to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Mozart was blocking out his music world as well, though. yeah. You know, it's a bit of a party pig. So
he was.
There's that
he?
Famous story about Don Giovanni. Have you heard
yeah,
this one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so I haven't heard
that. Well, he didn't finish the score. I think it was barely done. And he finished it in one night just before the premiere. And that was after going out as well.
Wow.
So, yeah, he would have stayed up all night. And I don't know how they would have done it, though. He must have had a bunch of printers working with him to complete all the pages. But, yeah.
And here we are talking about it.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah,
yeah, that story.
Yeah.
So with the trumpet, first of all, who's your inspirations when it comes to trumpet?
Right, okay. Jazz musicians.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is. It's more jazz musicians than kind of the other guys, although I have a great amount of respect for them as well. Living ones, it would be a guy who's in New York now who originally was from, I think, I might get this wrong, but I think he's from Tel Aviv, he's from Israel.
Okay.
Called Avishai Cohen. So if you look him up, you'll get either him or a famous bass player who lives in the same city.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so when Avishai, the trumpet player, brought his first album out, he called it Avishai Cohen, the trumpet player, just so he would, you know... People knew which one they were getting.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he makes some amazing sounds. And I think the thing that's different about, you know, if you're talking about this compared to other styles of music, it's an investigation of the tone as well. So it's not
You're talking just, about the trumpet or
yeah,
jazz?
Just jazz. Yeah, jazz, oh, okay. trumpet or mm. jazz in general. But, you know, if we're talking specifically about trumpet playing, you know, you can do different things with your lips and with your air and your pressure to create a different tone. And then on top of that, you know, it's the gear that you use. So, I mean, this trumpet here I like using is from the 40s and it just has heaps of character.
Wow.
This is a Martin Handcraft Committee. And then another thing which is going to change it even more is the variable of the mouthpiece you use. So I'm using one that has a very very thick, a very deep cup. So that gives it, you know, quite a deep sound. You can't play as high, so you're sacrificing some things, but
even a mouthpiece can change the tone.
Big time, man, yeah. Yeah, it's a very important thing. So
it's heavy, isn't it?
You find guys like us, we have 20, 30, I don't know, some guys might have 50 or 100 of these sitting around the house. I'm at about 22, I think, now. So
wow.
Yeah, it's important. But, yeah, getting back to what you were saying before, so trumpet players, another guy from that part of the world is called Tom Harrell, and he's older. He'll be in his 60s now or something like that, but he's one of the fathers of kind of modern jazz trumpet playing and still kicking around doing it. And just, yeah, an amazing, amazing player. So every time, you know, I think anyone would listen to him, you'll enjoy it. But when I listen to it, I'm learning something, you know, and he's one guy that I do write down. I write down what he's doing. So, yeah, really cool.
So it's like artists, you know, like when we were talking about Kandinsky.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's like you're drawn to his art for a reason. Like, I also know that you're a painter, but when I looked at some of your paintings, they sort of resembled a bit of Kandinsky's, like, technique, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It must be the same in music. Like, there's a reason why you're attracted to the music that these guys play.
I think I'm attracted to the process.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, yeah, first and foremost, it's the sound. I think it's just a really cool form of music. And
yeah.
It expresses this kind of coolness and, you know, originally, I mean, people think of, you know, when they think of jazz, New York and you know, city streets and all of that stuff. But, I mean, why not? It's, you know, it's just such a cool thing. So that's the first and foremost thing. But then secondly, it is about the process of being able to do it. So it's different to being, say, a classical musician where, you know, those guys are bloody perfect at perfecting what's on a page and making sure that it stands out as a recording would. You know, and quite often they do get recorded and put on ABC after they play in the orchestras. What a jazz player does is they get up and they make it up. So they're like a composer, but in real time.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a totally different animal. It's just a totally different way that you're using your brain to create something.
But that's when I listen to jazz, I don't know, it's just I love that process because there's a similar process in writing too. You can plan the whole piece out, like with scene cards and things like that.
Yeah.
And then you've got on the CD, they call it a panzer writer. Stephen King calls it a panzer writer, where you're writing, it's like composing jazz, writing from the seat of your pants. So as a character, you're writing, but you don't know what the character is going to do next.
Yeah, cool.
And so as the story's forming, your character forms. So if the character is locked in a room, like Paul Sheldon in Misery, he didn't know how he was going to get out of that room.
Wow.
So it wasn't planned. Yeah. So every day he'd go to bed thinking, how is Paul Sheldon going to get out of this room tomorrow?
So it's like the writer's locked in the room for that time.
From what you were just saying, yeah, it's similar. Like he's writing from the seat of his pants. He's composing. There is no plan.
Yeah.
He's forming it as he goes. And I took that technique on in the last writing project I had, yeah, okay, which was a paid gig over a year. It was pressure because I had to deliver every 3 months. And there would be a week that goes past and I've got nothing.
It wasn't happening.
No. But it was so exciting to write like that. And so I can imagine jazz, every time you get up, there's this energy, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, one thing I've found is you become very close with people that you can rely on.
Yeah,
so if you've got a rhythm section, and I'm very fortunate, I've got one that I love to play with, and we're, you know, we're close friends and all of that stuff, but I can just rely on them. I know that they're going to be rock solid and they're going to get me through it. So so you need kind of that as well. And that's because of the, you know, the insecurity that comes with doing something like this. You know, it's very, when you get up and you do something, you don't know what you're going to do. You know, you have obviously a basic kind of theme and an idea. It's very thin. It's a skeleton kind of idea. But then you can go anywhere with it. Well, you've got to make sure that you've got some people that you can rely on to kind of get through it.
Oh,
yeah.
Now that we're, you know, these people that are holding each other's hands, taking you through the gig.
Yep.
Like, tell us about your trio.
You can put it that way, sure.
And how long have you been playing with them?
Yeah, so we met, I'll tell you the whole story. So it was more through... It really started back at a community band that I play in who, I will mention him because he's a real mentor to me. He's a guy who's just turned 100 years old, whose name, I don't think you'll mind if I mention, is George Franklin. And he was an absolute killer player back in his day. And he still conducts. So he conducts us every Monday night just to, around this area in a band room. It is. It's super cool. Anyway, through him, I met some musicians in the band. And I think it was around the time I was doing a Fringe show. And we kind of realized, all right, we need a piano player. So we got a piano audition happening and we got a couple to come down. And the one that we ended up picking was the one who now plays in the trio. So around that same time, we had a bass player, but he left and we got another one who is the bass player that we now have in the trio. But at this stage, you got to keep in mind there were six players. Now, where I was doing the Fringe show is this place in Bassendean called O2, which is quite a large bar. And at the end of it, I got chatting. I was having a drink with the owner and got chatting about, he wants to basically start up this kind of jazz night there. So I kind of, I had a bit of free time and I'm like, well, what about if I put it on and kind of start this thing? So, it was all happening. It was great. And that did happen for a couple of years or a year and a half, something like that. But with the restrictions and whatnot, he couldn't afford to have a six-piece band. So the trio was born.
Wow.
So that was kind of the beginning of it. Yeah, so... That's Hannah Kim, who plays the piano. She's from Korea. Her and her husband have been here for about 6 years now.
So not long.
Not too long, no. I think 6 years, maybe seven. I'll ask her next time I see her. And the bass player is a guy called Max Jones, who when I met him, and he was just filling in, as I said, for another guy who was playing regular and this wasn't long, man. This was like, I don't know, 6-7 weeks. We'd really been kind of, right. working on this project to start this kind of six-piece band. As soon as Max stepped onto the stage or into the rehearsal room and started playing, I just sensed this total difference. And that's one thing that, happens, it's an intuitive thing that we've all got. And I'm just thinking, I didn't say it to anyone, but I'm like, I want him, I want this guy to play with me. So yeah, he's just stuck around for that reason.
Oh, that's so cool.
And he's a very cool guy as well. And good for a chat. So,
and you guys obviously gel, musically together. Yeah?
Zero politics.
Yeah.
I don't know how we've done it, but if there's been any, it's been so minor that it could be squashed within, one conversation.
Did you ask Anna about the jazz culture in Korea? I've got a friend called Anna Kim.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, this is going to get a confusing conversation.
So what about the jazz culture in Korea? Did you ever ask her about that?
Yeah, I've mentioned it to her and we've even talked about going over and, trying to play over there and whatnot. It's huge over there.
Is it?
They love jazz and, I haven't been to that part of the world. I'd love to go to Korea. I'd love to go to Japan.
Same.
From what it sounds like, if I say this now, a Korean person's probably going to go, no. But it sounds like the jazz culture is kind of similar, in that they both really love it and it's a big thing. And I'll just stop there because I know their cultures are extremely different.
Yeah.
But as far as that goes, it's just, it has really spread through that part of the world.
Yeah.
Become a mainstream, quite popular thing. So they've got a jazz festival on Jeju Island, which is it's a tourist destination. I think there's a good horror film set on Jeju Island, actually. Yeah, and a good gangster film I saw recently. So it's used in a lot of Korean cinema. Yeah. But until recently, their kind of guest of honor for that jazz festival was Chick Corea, who played for Miles Davis in the 1960s. He played in the Isle of Wight, the Bitches Brew Band and whatnot with Keith Jarrett playing the organ. Well, Chick Corea was the other guy, so he was playing either organ or electronic piano, something like that. He passed away, a year and a half ago?
Oh, really?
So, really sad.
But him to go there, there must be a culture there.
Time. Yeah. They revered the guy. So,
wow.
Yeah, that would have been really cool to see, but unfortunately.
I know when I watched quite a few food programs in some of the old clubs in Japan, it was all jazz. They were playing jazz, like even the old liquor bars and stuff.
They love it, don't they?
Yeah, so I reckon you'd have a ball there.
I wonder how much of that is the influence of the Americans, Okinawa.
I think big time.
Yeah, big time, hey? Yeah,
big time, because during the war, the parents, this is one of the kids that's now older, and he's got a daughter, but during the war, they weren't allowed to play any of the American music. And they used to go up into their attic. This is one of the stories on a food program.
Wow. Okay.
And they used to go up into the attic and listen to American big band. So Benny Goodman and, you know.
Yeah.
And she remembers. So what happened is that father then, when the war finished, he became a jazz musician. And then he had a daughter who's now playing, and she's quite old now, but she also DJs. She's the oldest DJ in Japan.
The oldest DJ in Japan.
Yeah.
That's a title, isn't it?
Yeah. And she goes in a glitter jacket with the big, you know, sunglasses. Yeah. You know, and during the day she's cooking in this restaurant and she's playing, you know, all this music. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I reckon.
Cool story.
I think these countries could surprise you. You know, we always think of Chicago and New York and some places in Europe. Who knows? Like, I think Japan and Korea could really surprise you with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Oh, I've heard a story that if you go to the Japanese jazz clubs, and it's probably not all of them, but, you know, I've heard this story that you have to actually pay to get up and play.
Oh, is that right?
You know what I mean? So there's a real honor in, you know, just being able to get into these clubs and get up on stage.
Oh.
So, yeah, I think it is. It's a highly valued
art
form over there.
Do you know, like, I know you've traveled a bit. Because talking about, you know, your travels.
Yeah.
But I'm like you. I've got a real – we want to do a bit more of Europe, but I am dying to see the East Asia, like literally, you know, Taiwan.
Big Taiwan, for jazz again.
Japan, Korea, you know. I'd love to go to those places.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, so who knows?
You just got to be thinking, most of the places I've traveled to have been not that important has jazz been. Yeah. I think there was a famous jazz musician in Hanoi of all places.
Oh, really?
Like North Vietnam at one stage. Yeah. You heard about this absolutely cranking club, but I never made it out there. I think my travels haven't been about that. It's just, you know, experiencing different cultures and, the stuff people normally do.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Having said that, I've got one coming up that I'm planning for the end of the year. And I was debating with a mate about it the other day about that and say, man, it's... You know, it's almost damaging to a player to go for weeks and weeks without playing, especially on things like trumpet. So if we do it, we lose all these kind of muscles that we've built and, you know, all of that type of stuff. So, it's kind of heartbreaking to go, well, I went on a holiday, but the payoff was this. So I'm thinking about going and, you know, performing along the way.
Take your trumpet with you.
Yeah. You know, I mean, this is to the States, or I should have said.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
I mean, and jazz is, you know, jazz is from the States. Yeah, so it should be too hard to find a few places to play here and there. You
especially
know,
going to the
jams. And
can you imagine going to the old clubs that Bird, you know, that Bird played at? And
the ones that are still around.
Dizzy, I mean, it's all there, isn't it?
A lot of them, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So Ruben, tell us about the trumpet. Like, tell us the variations. Like, you were talking about the mouthpiece that changes tone. And a lot of the jazz musicians have, like, you've got 22 and, you know, some of them have 50.
Yeah. But there's famous stories, and on other instruments, of, say, like, a person loses their special mouthpiece. That's the end of their career. That's it. You know, like, they lost it on a flight or whatever, and that's, you know, it's over. That's it. Done.
Oh, geez. Can you imagine?
Well, I don't know. I chop and change. You know, I go, oh, this is the best one I've ever had. And that lasts for about 6 weeks. And then I find something else. Play another combination. Go, this is the best one.
Your career's so over because you lose something like this.
Yeah, I'm not too stuck on anything ever.
So lift up. What's the use? So you were saying this trumpet's about 80 years old.
Yeah, I think it's 1940 or 1941.
For the listeners, Ruben's just holding up this
Can I hold this
brass
in your camera?
You can, but I'm just describing
it. It's got an engraving on it.
Oh, okay.
I just want to show them that. So this is it. There's something here to cut just, out.
But describe it for the listeners.
Yeah, no worries. Okay, so this, I mean, you know, if I'm going to go way back to the family that made it were Martin, and it comes from Indiana. He was a German from the century before, from the 19th century, and he migrated over to America and started this company in the late 1900s. So, you know, the trumpets from the turn of the century and on are all really good quality, but with trumpets, it's not like, say, a Stradivarius violin where, you know, they can get restored and they'll go for another 700 years.
Mm.
The metals do corrode. So, you know, those older ones, you can definitely get them restored, but people... Generally, I suppose maybe it's a fashion thing as well, man, but they, you know, they do kind of play these ones from that heyday, you know what I mean? So if you do play a vintage horn, it's from, you know, the times of when Miles Davis was coming up or,
but do
you
they
know,
have
into
a,
that time
do they,
as well.
Do they get seasoned?
Do they get seasons? Yeah, I think they definitely change.
If
it's a negative or positive, I'm not really sure, you know, and that's really up for debate. You know, a lot of horn players hate vintage horns and the way they play because they lose compression. So I can actually describe that with this. So if I pull this thing out, you'll hear a popping sound, hopefully, because that means there's some compression.
Oh, okay.
Yep, and that's actually pretty good. But when I put it in, the fact that it doesn't push back means that the compression is... or the air is somehow escaping through there, so it means it's losing it slightly through its age.
Okay.
So with that, I did ask a fella I know who repairs instruments and plays in Wazzo, actually. He's a horn player in Wazzo. And
For those overseas, it's the WA Symphony
Orchestra. Yeah, WA Symphony Orchestra. Rob Gladstones is his name. And he described it to me and said, well, you get more of a fluffy sound through that. So I think that's one of the kind of major issues with playing these vintage horns is the notes can... What does fluffy mean? It's up to interpretation, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Are you talking about very soft or?
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just telling you what he said, man.
Yeah, yeah. Can you? So this is your favourite, though. This is what you
play. Yeah, yeah. This is for a number of reasons. It's I will start, though, by contradicting myself and saying it is not my most playable horn.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's not contradicting.
But it is my favourite. Mm. I love the tone of it. So I love the way that it sounds. And it also plays classical music really well, even though it is known now as a jazz horn. When it was made, they didn't give a damn. You know, it was just played for anything. So, you know, it could be marching bands or classical music. So it's really just a trumpet. Having said that, I've got another one that isn't here that's more playable. So say if I'm playing stuff that is more acrobatic, meaning it moves very high and low and fast and slow and everywhere. This other one, which cost about 1/7 the price of this one, by the way, is a lot better.
What is the cost of something like this, vintage horn? Like a vintage horn from 80 years ago.
Okay.
From Martin, right?
Yeah, that's right. So this is a Martin Handcraft Committee, and I paid $2,400 US for it.
Far out.
So it's quite a lot of money, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. When you start to delve into the professional horns and ones, you know, that have a bit of a name.
Well, you know, I can see it, but you just don't expect it, you know, because I'm a newbie. I don't know anything about what things cost.
Well, it's all dull looking, isn't it? I mean, it looks like it could have been enough.
Well, to me, it looks more expensive when it's like that. Like if you pulled out a shiny, you know, polished trumpet, I'm thinking, well, I could go down to the music store and buy one of those. Yep. But when I see something like that, I already know there's a cost
relic
involved.
Factor to it. Yeah.
There's a cost involved, you know. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
What are some of the others you got here?
Well, okay, so yeah, I did bring some to show.
Now explain it for the listeners.
For the listeners. So what I have here is not a trumpet. This is a flugelhorn.
Right.
So if you're going to look that up, it's F-L-U-G-E-L and horn.
Yeah. It's almost like it's stretched out. It's a lot bigger to hold.
Yeah, and the bell's bigger.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the bell, the diameter is probably another 1.5, 2 inches. I don't know.
Lift that up a little bit.
Yeah.
So, just for that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay, and this one here is a French. So the French made these classic ones called guinons. This is a guinon from 1975.
Right.
And, I mean, again, it's like a trumpet because it's a bunch of piping and the way you play a trumpet is by making this sound and buzzing your lips.
Which, like a raspberry.
Yeah, yeah, which then sounds like this with a mouthpiece. You know, and then that buzz, of course, translates into music with the, you know, with the
instrument
itself.
That's cool. I didn't even know the mouthpiece would have a tone. As in before you plug it into the instrument.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, as I kind of started the podcast, I was saying the shape of the mouthpiece is extremely important.
Yeah, wow.
So if I use one with a smaller cup, so, you know, and say, I mean, there's a lot of differences, but say the end of it, this end, which is called the shank, if that's wider, it's going to allow more air through it. So if you do that, it can produce more volume, but it also means you need to play it more powerfully.
Sure.
So if that's thinner, that's quite important. The bore, which is the tiny hole in the center of it, if that's micro, so if it's really small, you can hit high notes a lot easier.
Right.
But it also thins out your tone. So there's always a payoff.
Interesting.
There's a flip side to all of these things. So you need to kind of weigh it up and go, well, what am I using it for? It's like a tool, you know, it's like a tool for a trade.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a flugelhorn. I should play some of that because it's a really nice horn.
Yeah. Right.
You want to hear something?
Yeah, why not? It does have a nice fluffy.
This one probably does have some leaks in it, actually. But yeah, I mean, a flugelhorn does that. That's the whole point,
is
it plays this kind of mellow, romantic kind of. Kind of, you know, mellow sound. You know, that's what it's really. Made to be able to do. So it's for the love songs, it's for the ballads. I mean, trumpets play it as well, but yeah, this is kind of, you know, if you're slowing down and you're doing something sentimental and people are dancing, this is the horn you kind of pick up and play with. Do you want to hear something else?
Yeah, so when Ruben's in love, you'll hear that coming
from. That's right, I'll just be playing it all the time. I've got one more here, which has nothing to do with jazz. So this is the kind of trumpet that they play in the classical.
Right.
In the classical world. So that's a lie. In the classical world, they actually do play flugelhorns, and they do play cornets, and they do play trumpets that were like the other one. That was a B-flat. This trumpet, though, was pitched differently. So this might be a bit complicated to explain to non-musicians, but I'll try. So this trumpet is pitched to C, which means if I play a C on this and then I play a C on the piano, it's going to sound the same.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But if I play a C on the other one, it's not going to sound the same as a C on the piano.
Oh.
It's going to sound a tone below, which is a B flat. So the other trumpet's all displaced by one step.
That's why this is used more for classical?
No. No, this is used more for classical because it has a brilliant open sound. It's generally described as being very open, so it just sings.
Oh, okay.
And the other one can be kind of blended with groups. It can do lots of its timbre is different, if I can put it that way. Its tone color is just different, but this one fits better just with that idiom of classical music.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's what you played or not, but it's got a very crisp.
It just sounds old worldy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It sounds like it comes from the old world. and I brought, as requested, I did bring some other stuff to show as well.
Yeah, so, please do.
So trumpet accessories.
So just to explain again to the listeners.
Yep.
The poor listeners are going, what is it? What does it look like?
What are these things?
What does it look like?
Well, how do I describe these things?
They look like little metal Turkish lamps.
Yeah, they're weird looking, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they've all got little bits of cork on them. So these are things that you put into the end of your trumpet to change, again, to change the tone color, the sonority, the timbre.
Lift one up in front of you
because
they won't be able to see that on
camera.
Okay,
so this is the one I use all the time, and you can see because it's...
So this looks like a light aluminium bulb, a light bulb, really.
Yeah, yeah.
The end you plug into the power obviously goes at the end of the trumpet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yep. A firm twist. And yeah, I mean, it just changes that. So, I mean, this one, when I play it, I'm sure if you listen to any jazz or any jazz trumpet playing, you will know this sound. This was made famous by Miles Davis, I think.
Pretty sure.
I may be wrong, but at least he was the first one to really mainstream it, you know, with his commercial success. And he did. I mean, he loved to play it. And again, it was used for, you know, instead of using the flugelhorn, he used it for those kind of solo, lyrical kind of love songs, you know. You know what I mean? It's just got that kind of... I mean, because what it's doing, I mean, if you can see it, if you're watching the video, you can see that the bore of the trumpet, meaning the bell, has been reduced from, you know, the size that it was down by, what, 7-8 times?
Yeah, definitely.
To this tiny little hole.
That's...
So then you get that kind of almost comical kind of... kind of sound, you know, but it's great. I mean, you know, with all of these, it's like I've got an arsenal of almost different instruments.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's
yeah.
the way that it kind of comes out when you're, you know, when you're playing with a group, it can certainly just change everything. All right, so the other two I got here are things that I actually don't use very often. They just kind of sit at home, but I brought them anyway for the educational reason. This is a normal stock standard straight mute. So this is very heavily used in classical music.
Right.
And
so this looks like a light bulb too, but it's a little bit smaller.
They're all just light bulbs.
For the listener, for the listeners. You know what it reminds me of? The I Dream of Jeannie lamp.
Oh, yeah, yeah, lamp. Totally, yeah. This one has a copper end, so I don't know. Apparently, that's supposed to make it sound better.
But, okay.
You know, just it gives it that type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And then I've got, God knows where I got this from.
This is a.
I think this is called a bucket mute.
This looks like a Turkish lamp.
They're all just Turkish. Or yeah. I Dream of Jeannie lamps. Yeah. Yeah. This, for the first 15 years of its life, it was full of cotton wool. So there's this kind of fluffy cotton wool in there. And at one stage, I got fed up, and I'm like, I've got to pull it out to see how it sounds, and I just never bothered to put it back in. So now it just has this sound. Yeah, that type of thing. So, yeah, it's almost like you got a flugelhorn when you don't have
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say it sounded like the other trumpet.
Yeah. It does. It really gives it that kind of resonance, doesn't it? Yeah. And then you were asking me, I mean, since we've met, how the hell do I practice all the practice that I need to do in an apartment?
In an apartment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, having, you know, being an apartment owner. Well, the way that I do it is with this one. So this here is an incredible device. I mean, this thing has help myself and I imagine a lot of trumpet players to really improve in what they do. This isn't the whole device, this is just the end of it, so right. It's the mute. But
so it's something Ruben's putting it's a little black device Ruben is putting into the end of the trumpet.
Yeah, it's made by Yamaha.
Yeah, and it's black and it's almost okay. It's got a
yeah, it's got a plug, connector. It's electronic, yeah. So inside now there's a microphone.
Oh, okay.
So that's going to connect now to a cable, and then that connects to it's only like, I don't know, 5 centimeters by about 4 centimeter, very thin amplifier.
Right.
And the amplifier then runs to headphones, right?
That's cool.
So then, and also you can plug it into your computer, man. So that's really cool. So say if I want to put a jazz backing band on, which I do all the time, you know, I plug that in and run through tunes that I need to practice with, you know, the backing. Quite often just, you know, YouTube's great.
That's cool.
And, yeah, you know, I'm not actually just playing by myself.
Yeah.
And also it's got this, I don't know if it's fancy, but it's got this feature where you can make it sound like you're in a stadium or, you know.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
And like the reverb.
Got over that pretty fast. But, yeah. And, you know, if you hear that when it's actually in, it's not something you would actually perform with. So this is how it sounds to my neighbours, for instance.
Okay.
You know, you can't really hear that through the wall. So, yeah. I mean, this is, I don't know what year they brought these out, but I discovered it, about 8 years ago. And, man, it's just made a big difference to my life.
Well, also being able to practice.
Oh, totally.
You're not thinking about the time and, you know.
You know, and that thing that, you know, that myth about jazz musicians, you know, the song Round Midnight.
Wanting,
it's all true. Like, we do actually, you know, not like to play before midday and prefer to play around kind of 10 p.m. till, you know, 2 a.m. in the morning is when your brain's really creative and, you know, the juices are working.
Oh, man. Ruben, you know, because those who don't know, Ruben actually lives in the same complex. We live in a city, so we're in apartments
in
the city.
We're neighbours, yeah.
And, you know, I used to see guys who play electric guitar.
Yep.
And they would take their little amplifier, they would go down to the Supreme Court Gardens at midnight and just open it up there. And, just to hear like a trumpet. Like jazz trumpet over there in the middle of the night. We've got to take a walk one day and do it.
Yeah, I'll do that any time of the night or day. That's cool.
So if people want to discover, if people want to discover your music more,
yep.
Is there anywhere they can go? Is there gigs coming up or?
Okay, for the trio, yeah, we're pretty minimal. I mean, it's a local band, but we do have a Facebook page.
Okay.
So the name of it is The Old Road Trio.
The Old Road Trio.
Yeah, or I think it's The Old Road Trio 69, just because I couldn't get The Old Road Trio.
I'll put that on the show notes anyway.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll put it on the screen for everybody.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a SoundCloud that I keep, you know, my virtual audios of my compositions on. So that's it's SoundCloud Rumble Kink.
Rumble Kink.
Yep, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm trying to think of other places. There's some drop boxes, but yeah, as you mentioned, we'll put them up later.
I'll put them up on the screen and I'll get that off you. But man, it's been a pleasure.
I can't believe it's over. I'm really sad now.
Yeah, well, you know, I learned heaps, and I'm sure people that will listen in and watch will also. I think you got to watch this one because see the different types of trumpets and the attachments going in. It's actually really cool to see.
Yeah, cool.
But thanks so much, Ruben.
And just one more thing. I would be, you know, us being in such proximity to each other, I'd be happy to answer any questions that maybe come to you, you know, for your viewers. So,
yeah.
If anything comes up, let me know and I'll give the educated answer that I can.
And because you're a neighbour, maybe a regular, maybe next month or a month after, come back again. We can talk about life and stuff, you know, nothing too controversial, you know. Thanks, brother.
Cheers, mate.
See ya.
Okay, see ya.